have time to rest.
Looking down the gut, shoots and rests, flashed up the glove. Take it away.
As they wait to see who they'll play in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Slot shoots, he scores! Matt Marchand with the empty netter.
It's a black and gold freight train.
And they are celebrating on the bench.
Hear the local call of every game on one station. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
This is a simple game. You throw the ball, you hit the ball, you catch the ball. You got it!
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz.
Brought to you by Jordan's Furniture, Big Y World Class Market, Brennan Smoke Shop, Rodenizer Plumbing, Heating, AC and Electric, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Advanced Auto Parts, U.S. Marker Board, Boston Volkswagen, Gravely Zero Turn Lawnmower, Foxwoods Resort Casino, Jackson Lumber, and Mass General Cancer Center.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Okay, here you go, Red Sox fans. The Houston Astros are in town, rematch of last year's American League Championship Series and a three-game weekend series featuring the last two World Series winners and quite possibly the two hottest teams in baseball, if you, you know, throw out the Red Sox loss to the Rockies early in the week. But nonetheless, in the month of May, these two teams have been probably the hottest teams in the game and, I would dare say, the two hottest offenses in the American League. Houston has played 14 games this month. The Red Sox have played 13. They rank 1-2 in runs scored in the month of May. The Astros OPS right now for the month of May, 961 as a team. As a team in the month of May. The Red Sox, second in the league at 885. I mean, again, you have two red-hot offenses going toe-to-toe, and you have, again, the two best teams in the league over the last couple of years. The two best teams in baseball over the last couple of years. So I'll tell you what, here's what we're going to do. Let's open up the phones. 617-779-0985, because my question to you is obvious tonight. And as always, we'll start with Jimmy Stewart, Jim Murray, get their sort of assessment of it as the Red Sox take on the Astros this weekend at Fenway Park. What kind of stock, if any, do you put into this weekend series? That is really the question. What kind of stock, if any, do you put into this weekend series? Murray, go.
Oh, I think it's a great litmus test. It's the best team that they're going to be playing at the right time where they're coming in on an 8-game winning streak. You're talking about how good their offense is. I wish the pitching matchups were a little sexier. I don't know much about this Corbin Martin kid that made his debut a few weeks ago, but overall, I don't know how you can't look at this and think that this is anything less than like the first real big matchup for the Red Sox this season, and that includes New York.
Jimmy Stewart?
I put zero stock in this series because last year they went into the playoffs with under 500 records against those playoff teams, and they ran the table. So you can't prove anything by a regular season baseball series. And that, by the way, is a crime.
Okay. So I happen to agree with you, Jimmy. I the early part of the year isn't necessarily a good barometer for what comes late. Nonetheless, boy, talk about straddling the line and sitting on the fence. I also agree with you, Murray. Given the way the Red Sox first half of this season has gone so far, and it's really the first quarter of the season, I don't know how you don't look at this season with some level of, or this series rather, with some level of anticipation. And that doesn't even include what happened last October. Like, I'll tell you what, let's just dial it back here for just a minute. Okay, 2 years ago, you played this team in the American League Division Series and they kicked your ass. They kicked your ass. You lost in four games. Okay? And you got obliterated in Houston. I mean, you did. You got annihilated in those games in Houston. Last year, you faced them again. You went to Houston, tied 1-1, and you won all three. Right? You won all three. And do I have to remind everybody, do you remember how it ended? Don't you remember the good sort of just how the Red Sox answered the Astros, Alex Bregman and his Twitter account, and then he comes up in a big spot against Nathan Eovaldi in Game 5 with the Astros series on the line. Do you remember, Jimmy? Refresh my memory.
Down he goes. A strikeout for Eovaldi as Bregman is now 0-for-4, second time they've struck him out tonight.
Dropped down a little through the riser at 102. Yeah. Four-seamer. By Bregman.
102 miles an hour. 102. Bregman comes up late in the game. Evaldi goes 102. Sit your ass down. Post that on Instagram, bitch. Like, that's what that was. Oh, I love that. That, to me, was one of the great moments of the game. Oh, did I love that. After that whole thing, here's Bregman in the box. Here's Evaldi on the mound. Elimination night. 102. Suck on that. They wouldn't throw him a fastball the whole series. 102, you can't hit that. Sit your fat ass down. No. Oh, I loved it. Oh, God, did I love that. 102. When's the last time a Red Sox pitcher threw 102?
That stuff usually comes home to roost.
What a bullet. Oh, my God. Sit on that one, bitch, and spin. I just like reliving that, Murray, I have to admit.
That was the greatest thing of that series, in a series that the Red Sox had a lot of great moments from defense from Mookie Betts and Andrew Benintendi. You have David Price out in his little Zen garden and figuring it all out there. Like, they shoved the bats right down the Astros' throats, and they went from confident to way too cocky, did Houston. And it blew up in their face. And so I can understand why they have a hair across their ass and they feel like they're going to come in here and have something to prove. And it's one of the reasons I think this is a big series, because they're coming in here like with a chip on their shoulder this weekend.
See, I think Houston's a little angry. I do. I do too. I think Houston's angry. And the Astros they started out slowly like the Red Sox did, and then they won 10 in a row and got right back on the beam. And that Astros team, I still believe, is the most talented team in the American League, in all of baseball. Really, I mean, they're loaded. And if Correa's healthy and everything else, the Astros are absolutely loaded. Now, all of that said, Nathan Eovaldi's not active for this weekend series. David Price is on the injured list. He was a big factor in the postseason last year, as we know. And he's not going to pitch until Toronto, it feels like. I haven't heard any updates on that out of Fenway Park tonight, but the last we heard, he was going to pitch in the Toronto series. Chris Sale will go in the finale, but Justin Verlander on the Astros side will also miss this series. Nonetheless, I don't know. I sort of believe in this kind of stuff in baseball building over time. And in a lot of ways, I'll tell you, I think the Astros are as much of a threat or more of a threat to the Red Sox than the Yankees are. Like, you know, the Yankees are in the division. Obviously, it starts there. But last year, to win the World Series, you were going to have to beat the Astros. You were going to have to beat them at some point. The Red Sox went down there and took all three. It was a 1-1 series going back to Houston, and we said, take two out of three in Houston. They're in good shape. They won them all. They won them all. Now, Houston comes in here, and let's be honest. The Red Sox sucked for a long time this season, and they have played really garbage. They played 7 good games this year, 5 of them against Tampa Bay. They won 3, all 3 in Tampa, but they lost the 2 up here. There was a rainout, and they lost the 2 in New York. So they're 3-4 against the best teams they've played. And again, I'm not going to tell you there's a huge carryover and that what you see now is what you're going to see in October. Because the rosters will change in July. We'll have healthy bodies on the team. A lot is going to change by then. Nonetheless, Houston's here. You cleaned up on them in October. They're hot. They have something to prove. I think it's a good opportunity to sort of get a little check on the Red Sox. Okay, let me quickly take a couple of calls, and then we'll tee up David Cone. Mike's in Connecticut. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, hey, Maz. So the bullpen, I feel like I still like Brazier. Like, I know he's struggling to, like, get those wins, but I like him, I like Barnes, and I like Walden.
But
I still feel like they have that thing where they kind of suck, and, like, I don't know where to go from there.
So, but, Mike, I feel like you feel. I feel like they're an arm short in the bullpen. And I'll tell you what, the guy I'm interested in seeing, and this weekend might be a good opportunity to see it, let's see how Marcus Walden does. Now, all of that said, this is a good matchup for the bullpen. Okay, Houston's got a lot of righties in that lineup. It's a good matchup for the Red Sox bullpen. Let's see how they do. Tom's in Arizona. Go ahead, Tom.
Hey, Mavs, the Red Sox are going to lose tonight, and it's not because of our pitching injuries.
What is
it's
it?
It's because Sandy Leone is out on paternity leave this weekend.
So Tom's trying to bait me, but Leone is out. He's not going to catch this weekend. Christian Vasquez behind the plate for Rick Porcello. And I'll tell you what, remember early in the year when they brought Leone back? It feels like Porcello was one of the pitchers doing the most crying. And I,
Is that informed opinion?
Kinda. I mean, it's a little informed.
Okay.
So, but it feels like Porcello was one of the ones doing the most crying. Okay. Now look, pitchers are temperamental creatures. You know, they like their comfort, they like the catcher, they like the whole thing. So here you go. Vasquez is behind the plate tonight. The Astros are in town, and by the way, this is a bad matchup for Porcello. Historically, based on the numbers, and I also think stuff-wise, it's a bad matchup for Porcello. We can explain some of that.
Based on his last start, even though he did settle, he's lucky it wasn't worse that he only gave up the 4 runs. He was getting hammered. Even foul balls, they were like screaming at 100 miles an hour.
Totally right. And I'll tell you what, even if he had pitched well in the last game, I don't love him against this team, Murray. And so, again, we'll get into some of the particulars later. We went over some of this in the playoffs last year. I just think stylistically he's a bad match for that Houston team. In any case, we'll get back to your calls. Also, David Cohn, analyst with the Yes Network, former major league pitcher, one of my favorites, has a new book coming out. It was an opportunity to talk baseball with him. He joins the program next.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, welcome back. Joining us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, David Cohn, who pitched for the Red Sox in 2001, obviously spent a good chunk of his career in New York, starting out with the Mets, then the Yankees. He's got a new book coming out, which we'll get to in a minute. But first of all, David, thank you for joining us.
My pleasure, Tony. Always good to talk to you.
Well, likewise. So I'll tell you what, let's start here, because obviously the Red Sox got off to a horrendous start, and the Yankees, more than anybody, have had probably the right to get off to a bad start with all the injuries they've had, and yet they've won and won consistently. So my question to you is, how are they doing it?
Well, smoke and mirrors, I guess. I mean, it really is remarkable that the whole narrative around the Yankees has changed to these replacement players and these lovable underdogs. And, you know, it is the evil empire. So, you know, the Yankees are supposed to be Darth Vader, you know, the operational Death Star. And you've got Gio Urshela and Luke Voit and guys like that, D'Amico Herman, who have just not only replace the injured stars, but thrive. So, you know, it's really kind of energized the Yankee fan base.
So one of the things I like to ask people from New York is Aaron Boone's now in his second season there. How do you think he has handled the whole thing with the Yankees?
You know, actually, I think he's done very well. I think, you know, the fact that all these injuries and that he's handled it so well and stayed so positive, and this is really probably why he was hired, was because of his personality. He's kind of unflappable. He really, you know, he has experience in the media, but not a lot of managerial experience. So he was really scrutinized and really kind of beaten up last year. And it always comes around pitching changes for every manager nowadays. It's leave the starter in, take him out, bring this reliever in, bring the other reliever in. And he certainly went through that last year. But I think the Yankees fan base has taken a step back and kind of appreciated the job that he's doing right now and just kind of staying steady and staying positive with this young core of players.
David, do you think he's changed at all from last year? Because it felt at times like he was almost, and you know, look, you know, I'm up in Boston here. You know how this market is. You spent a year here. It almost felt like he was too positive. Like at times it was happy horse crap, for lack of a better term. Did he adjust at all between seasons?
Yes, I think he has. You hit the nail on the head, Tony. I mean, that really is the case. You lose some credibility if you're not honest with your fan base. I mean, there's no more passionate fans in the Northeast. I mean, the Red Sox base of fans of the Yankees are two of the most prominent ones out there, and they demand credibility. They demand honesty, and so you're right. They see right through that, and certainly Aaron Boone, I think in his first year of being a manager, I think it was a learning curve for him. Being a major league manager now is a collaborative effort with the analytics department, with all of the front office having more of the power now. it's a whole different dynamic. And I think that probably caught him off guard a little bit. The days of the Joe Torres or the Jim Leylands are kind of a thing of the past. You have to have a collaborative effort now and really rely on a lot of different decision makers. Even in game, real time information is passed on to managers now from the analytics department.
Okay, so I'll tell you what. All of that said, let's get to your most recent project with Jack Curry, longtime of the New York Times. So, look, let me ask you about your season here in Boston, because by the time you came here, you had won with the Blue Jays, you had won 4 and 5 years with the Yankees, and your last year in New York was might have been the worst year of your big league career. And then you, and I don't know whether that's a stretch or maybe you definitively say that it was the worst year of your career.
Yes, it definitely was. And, you know, I think that's the beauty of the book that Jack Curry and I did, is I take you back to my childhood and playing wiffle ball in the backyard. And I was 12 years old in 1975 when Louis Tiant was pitching for the Red Sox. And I fell in love with Louis Tiant. And I went back in the backyard and I tried to be just like Louis. In my backyard, I dubbed Conway Park. Certainly, when I got a chance to play for the Red Sox in 2001, it kind of took me back to those days in my childhood. And, you know, I get into that year a little bit, and really one of my favorite chapters, Tony, is about the pitcher-catcher relationship. And I had some friction that year with Doug Mirabelli, who was a catcher for the Red Sox that year.
Yeah.
And I talk about blowing up at him, after a game that I had a kind of a bad game. And this is the part of the book that's kind of raw and honest. I kind of take myself to task for being a little too hard on Doug Mirabelli in that situation, because I was a desperate aging pitcher whose skills were declining, and that relationship between the pitcher and catcher is so important. And I really dig deep into there with some of the catchers that I've had and some of the mistakes I had, how tough I was on Jorge Posada, and how Joe Girardi, when he caught my perfect game, was such a perfect match for me because he didn't take anything personally, and he knew that, hey, that's just Coney. He's wired. You know, maybe, you know, he's going to fly off the handle every now and then and lose his mind. And
okay, so I'll tell you what, for the benefit of our listeners, what was the genesis of the issue with Mirabelli? Do you remember what you said to him? What was the problem with you and Doug?
Yeah, you know, when I was warming up before the game, the starting catcher comes down the last 5 minutes to catch the starting pitcher in the bullpen. And I was trying to get my slider going that day, and it wasn't very good. But, I was always – that's a pitch I needed. I got to keep working with it. I got to have a catcher that pumps me up and stays with it. And then when we were walking in before the start of the game, Doug said to me, he said, look, your slider's not good today. He says, it's really flat. Maybe we shouldn't throw it. And I just thought that was just such a negative thing to put into my mind before we even started the game. And then throughout that game, we battled on signal calling. He quit calling the slider. I wanted to keep working on it because I know inning to inning, it can come to you. It may change. You can't give up on your best pitch. And we just kind of clashed that whole game. And then after the game, we kind of got in each other's face in the clubhouse. And I described the scene in the book. And I also take myself to task that maybe I was a little unfair on some catchers at times because of anxiety issues and confidence issues. And, Tony, I know you've seen this. A lot of the best athletes, the best pitchers in the world are sometimes the most insecure ones at times. And sometimes divas, sometimes we lose our minds. And that's the nature of pitching. It's such a unique position in all of sports. There's so much responsibility with a starting pitcher or any pitcher in that regard. So
David, you know what? Not that you care or that our listeners care. I always got along with Doug, but there were a lot of guys that wanted to wring his neck the way you wanted to wring his neck, I bet. So, yeah. And I bet you already know that anyway. I mean, he was a guy that, you know, could just sort of say what was on his mind, and it didn't always come out the right way.
That's a big part of it. And the relationships in the clubhouse, I try to take you behind the scenes a little bit in the book.
The 0-1 season, okay, again, you would just come off the worst year of your career. And I know this is outlined in the book. I want to read part of it to you. But of all the years you picked to be in Boston, you picked like the worst, okay? Because from 95 through 07, the Red Sox went to the playoffs a million times. They won a couple of World Series. You picked like the worst year in Red Sox history during that particular span. And I don't think I need to tell you that it was a tough year. So reading from your book, Pedro pitched only 3 times in the last 3 months and argued with the front office about the severity of his shoulder injury. Manny, who was in the first year of his contract, was booed for not hustling, and there was talk about how he felt he had made a mistake in signing with Boston. Carl Everett and Jimmy Williams had a shouting match in Williams' office, which I remember I was standing right outside it. Williams was fired. Kerrigan replaced him. The Red Sox tried to demote John Cumberland, the pitching coach. He refused to accept and was fired. After that development, Nomar Garciaparra was overheard saying, "That's why nobody wants to play here." So, look, you played in Boston. You played in New York. And I remember you saying at the time, and I want to say it was sort of an offhand comment that ended up in print. And if I remember right, I don't think you were too thrilled about it. But I remember you saying something to the effect of, "Man, I thought the Bronx Zoo was tough, but this place takes the bleeping cake." Okay?
Yeah.
So Boston versus New York, was this a harder place to play? Was it a, you know, and again, you were here in a bad year, so I'm just curious as to your perspective on the two different places.
Well, that's very true. I think the allure, you know, I mentioned, being a huge Louis Tiant fan and, you know, the wiffle ball games and Conway Park and, you know, playing for the Red Sox was just really attractive to me at that time, even after having been a Yankee. So, yeah, I came in, you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, and I wanted to be part of the team that broke the curse of the Bambino. I think that was everybody who played for the Red Sox wanted to be that first team to break through. So the dynamic was completely different. We lost Veritek that year to an injury. If you remember, he broke his elbow over on the on-deck circle on a pop fly.
So I remember well, yeah.
It was injury after injury. The organization was in transition. The ownership was in transition as well. The Yawkey Trust was putting in plans to sell the team. The managerial change in the middle of the season, and certainly 9/11 too as well. I mean, I remember being in Fenway Park, the first game at Fenway Park after 9/11 happened, and there were "I Love New York" signs in the stands. I mean, that was the dynamic that year. You know, Boston, I'll never forget how classy the fans were, you know, after 9/11 and how they treated New York and rallied kind of the whole baseball world. So I have fond memories of playing in Fenway and playing for the Red Sox. But you're right, Tony, that year was a disaster. It was tough. There was a fatalistic attitude because the team hadn't won their first championship yet. And I got a feeling it's a little different now. I think if you're a young Boston Red Sox fan, you probably only know winning at this point, and certainly in this century, since the time I played there, it's been pretty good for the Red Sox fans.
Yeah, not just the Red Sox. They win at everything here now, David. It's, you know, yes. Stanley Cups, Super Bowls, NBA, it's everything all the time. But look, we always appreciate having on the show. Certainly our most sincere wishes and for good luck with the book. And anytime you want to come on, I try not to bother you, but anytime you want to come on, we'd love to have you, and you're welcome to join us.
No, my pleasure, Tony. Good talking to you.
Okay, David Cohn, we'll be right back after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazzarotta show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So our thanks to David Cohn for joining the program. I always like Cohn when he pitched for the Red Sox. I mean, he was only here a year, but he was one of those guys that because you know, the Yankees were so good all of those years from 95 really through 2000. And Cohn was on four of the World Series winners. He was always on he was also on the team that lost in the 95 playoffs to the Mariners. Cohn was a great big game pitcher. 8-3 in career in the postseason. He had an ERA under 2, I think, in the World Series. So, but the year, you know, I get to know him a little bit when he was with the Yankees, and then he came to the Red Sox. I get to know him better. He was friends with Saberhagen, whom I also liked. And, you know, I connected with David Cohn. And I always thought he was a good guy to talk to. Had one of the great lines to me, Murray, about dealing with the media and why some guys were good at it and some guys were bad.
Oh, yeah?
He said in his experience, the media wanted two things, accessibility and accountability. And he gave it to him, and that was it. And he never really had much of a problem. Early parts of his career, a little shaky in terms of, you know, some of the off-field stuff. But Cone was a good guy on a team, good guy in a clubhouse. So our thanks to him for joining the program. And if you're interested in the book, and, you know, I think Cone was a great guy to watch pitch. The book is Full Count, The Education of a Pitcher. You can get it on Amazon. I think it just came out within the last week, and apparently is being very well received. So you can catch it there. We'll get back to your calls now, 617-779-0985. I want to get to the Red Sox lineup tonight because I think there's an interesting detail there. But first, Ryan in Andover wants to talk about Michael Chavis, and I'm wondering if this at all relates to my opinion on Chavis last night and how I don't know if I love him as a guy. He doesn't feel like a likable rookie to me. I felt the same way about Benintendi. Murray pointed that out last night. I like the production. I'm not going to lie to you about that. But he feels like a pretty cocky, arrogant kind of kid to me. Ryan in Andover, what do you got?
Tony, great show. I love you. But no offense, I didn't listen to you last night.
Don't worry about it. Don't worry about
it. So I think he's a cost-controlled stud. Personally, I wouldn't trade him at all. Honestly, he's got massive power. He brings an edge to the team. And I think most importantly at this stage, if they're winning ball games with him in the lineup, I don't see a need for Pedroia to be around, and I think he's clouding the whole picture. I mean, a middle infield power threat like him doesn't come around very often, and I think he's a rare talent.
Ryan, I generally agree with you. I like the idea of the power in the middle of the lineup, too. Let me ask you a quick question. Do you think Chavis can stay on the field? And I'm not talking about health.
Yeah, I know, and I do. I think with these all different types of drugs, and I don't know anything about them, obviously. It just seems like I'm willing to take that risk. And I think I don't consider anybody clean. I think everybody's on something. It's on me for being like that. But honestly, I don't put it past anybody to get tested positively at any point in time. So
yeah. So Ryan, listen. Yeah, Ryan, it's not on you. That's a realistic point of view. There are a lot of guys in the game that have used performance enhancers. My concern with Chavis is that he got caught. That's the alarming thing. And if he gets caught again, you know, I'm not worried about the length of the suspension. I'm worried about whether, you know, you might have an opportunity to sell high on the player. Now, I told
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is the Baseball Reporters.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Big Y matchup of the game brought to you by Big Y World Class Market, serving the Massachusetts community for over 80 years. Again, Astros in town to face the Red Sox tonight. It's a good matchup. Good weekend series. Sale's going to go on Sunday. Are the Red Sox TBA tomorrow? Starting pitcher? I thought Hector Velasquez was going to go.
No, Velasquez is what I saw.
Okay. So someone earlier said TBA. I'm pretty sure it was going to be Velasquez.
Yeah, Velasquez and the kid, Corbin Martin.
Okay. And then Sunday is you have the pitching matchup in your favor, Chris Sale and Brad Peacock, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And but tonight's matchup, Gerrit Cole against Rick Porcello. I'm clearly tilted in the direction of the Astros. Couple of Red Sox numbers to match up for you. Bogaerts does not hit Cole at all. 1-for-11, and that stands to reason. Cole's vicious on right-handed batters, and Bogaerts can still have trouble with the slider away, a good one. 1-for-11, 3 strikeouts. Mookie Betts, however, 5-for-8 against Gerrit Cole, which is tremendous for a right-handed batter against a pitcher of Cole's caliber. All of Betts' hits are singles, and I don't think you're going to see a ton of power from the right side against Cole, but nonetheless, Mookie's done well against him. On the other side, George Springer, 5-for-12 with a homer against Porcello, and overall, the Astros, 270 as a team with an 834 OPS against Porcello. I don't love this matchup for Porcello. The Astros have a ton of right-handed batters. The good ones are mostly right-handed. And instinctively, you would look at that and say, well, Porcello should be better against righties because his ball moves down and in, except these Astros or these right-handers on the Astros, these are guys that I think hit that pitch. Anything moving in towards them is dangerous. So if I'm Porcello, particularly at Fenway Park, I'm trying to live on the outside part of the plate. For that matter, left field is short in Houston too, but I would try to live on the outside part of the plate tonight if I'm Porcello, and that's a very fine line to walk. Adam Jones coming up here in just a minute or so. What do you got?
Well, we're going to go in the Wayback Machine tonight. We're going to take a trip back in time to, let's call it last September. Patriots have lost a couple of games. Red Sox, I don't trust the Red Sox to go on a run. We're feeling pretty good about the Celtics. Bruins did nothing in their offseason. And we go way back in the time machine and kind of revisit how we felt about some of these teams and where they wound up. Because, spoiler alert, the Celtics didn't wind up in such a hot spot. While everybody else, at least two out of the three thus far, have done their job, and we'll see if the Bruins do as well. So that's what we'll be doing.
Really amazing, isn't it?
It is.
Back then, if you would bet, you'd bet on the Celtics to win and the others to lose. And then it totally went the other way. Incredible. And the platinum age of Boston sports, they never lose. Murray's Get Your Headlines, except for the Celtics. Murray's Get Your Headlines. Everybody have a good weekend. We'll see you Monday.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.